Hello? Who's there? Hello? Hello, who's there?
Yeah, this is Hans Molina. I'm supposed to be guest with Chris Gerner.
Okay, well, Hans, how about starting the show by yourself? I guess Chris has got hung up, and hopefully he'll join you in a few minutes. Otherwise, the hour is yours. Go ahead. You're on.
Okay. Well, we have a situation that Chris was hung up a little bit. My name is Hans Molina. Supposed to be doing this for now, and well, I'm sort of trying to figure out what we should talk about. In the previous shows, we accepted basically we were talking about the Soviet strategy, the perestroika, how it was all set up by Russia, by Moscow, in order to basically show America that communism is no longer a threat. So today I was going to talk with Chris about very much significant recent message from Soviet Union, from Russia, basically about Russia's connection to world terrorism, namely Al-Qaeda. There was an interview published on the internet on Jeff Nyquist's website that was conducted by an independent newspaper in Poland with FSB, former FSB officer that was involved in handling terrorism situation and also training of terrorists, and his name is Alexander Litvinenko. And it's amazing, amazing basically interview that shows how wrong the Western analysts are, that, and also the Western societies are, in accepting that we are dealing with Muslim fanatics, but at the same time we are really dealing with sophisticated strategy of the communist leadership of Russia. Now, without accepting the fact that the collapse of communism was a fraud set up by Moscow and related sister services in advance, we won't be able to accept or basically realize that communism is not behind the terrorism. Of course, based on my personal knowledge and when I served in Czechoslovak communist military, my unit was involved in training these people. Also, we were training people from Libya and from the communist government of Angola. Therefore, I was very much involved in such things, not directly though, but we had knowledge of these things, even though the communists were trying to conceal it from ordinary citizens. There was also some kind of talk that this was actually going on. In order to go through with this strategy, Russians set up also training camps outside of Russia, namely after invading Afghanistan. There were training camps set up in Afghanistan so Russians could claim that they have nothing to do with terrorism. Also, what is very important to notice is that in order to facilitate this kind of strategy, the Russians had to become, at least by their own statement to America, have become our strategic allies in the war on terror. Except I have a problem with that, because, of course, if Russians were such a friend of ours, the best help they could ever give us would be to supply us files and information data, basically, on the people that the Soviet bloc trained, namely the terrorists, the Islamic terrorists. So, in that sense, let me quote from the interview, because it's quite significant. Again, this is interview with Soviet or Russian agent Alexander Litvinenko. He served in one of the most secretive departments of the Russian KGB, the Department of the Analysis of Criminal Organizations. He was also senior operations officer and deputy head of the 7th section, which was in fact responsible for dealing with these operations. And I'm quoting from the article published by Mr. Nyquist. The question was, in your opinion, is the originator of this, and they're quoting about the London bombing, recent London bombing, the originator of this London terrorist attack, who is the originator of it? And Litvinenko's answer is very significant. You know, I have spoken about it earlier. I shall say now that I know only one organization that has made terrorism the main tool of solving political problems. It is the Russian Special Services. The KGB was engaged in terrorism for many years, and mass terrorism at the special department of the KGB. They trained terrorists from practically every country in the world. Now, this is very significant. I can confirm on this because Czechoslovakia was a major part of this operation. Of course, Czechoslovak communists set up at least two or three terrorist training camps in Czechoslovak territory. One of them was near a major military base where the Czechs were moving these terrorists for basically handling explosives for training and field training. Handling explosives, weapons, preparing them to conduct the terrorist operations in the field. Usually, according to my information, my sources from Eastern Europe, the training was or took at least 18 months, and was very very much involved, involving a lot of this kind of learning, sophisticated handling of equipment, and also gathering information for future use. Basically, communists were experts in this kind of training. What is very significant when we look at, in fact, the collapse of so-called collapse of communism and Eastern Europe, and none of these files were declassified, so the Western intelligence services never learned any of this from the so-called newly democratic regimes of Eastern Europe. That was never revealed to the West. Now, let me go back to the interview, which is, again, an interview with Alexander Litvinenko, of the formerly of the Russian FSB. He was also a counterterrorism expert in the central staff of the FSB organizations. Litvinenko said, could you name some of the terrorists prepared at the special courses of the KGB FSB? And Litvinenko's answer again, the bloodiest terrorists in the world were or are agents of the FSB or KGB. These are well known, like Carlos Ilyich Ramirez, nicknamed the Jackal, the late Yasser Arafat, Saddam Hussein, Öcalan, he's condemned in Turkey, Vadi Hadan, the head of the Service of External Operations of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, why the head of the Communist Party of Lebanon, Mr. Papionu from the Cyprus, Sean Garland from Ireland, and many others, all of them were trained by the KGB, received money from their weapons and explosives, counterfeit documents, and a communication equipment for carrying out acts of terrorism worldwide. Well, this is nothing new to me. What the major information that came from Litvinenko was, of course, something that I suspected for a long time, is regarding the second in command of Al-Qaeda, Egyptian Ayman al-Zawahiri. And Litvinenko also claimed that Zawahiri and Al-Qaeda were behind the London bombing. Now, the question was, could you hint at least where from do you have such data regarding Zawahiri? Litvinenko says that the number two person in the terrorist organization, Al-Qaeda, who they are crediting with the series of explosions in London, Ayman al-Zawahiri, is an old agent of the FSB, being sentenced to death in Egypt for terrorism and hunted by Interpol. Ayman al-Zawahiri in 1998 was in the territory of Dagestan, where for half a year he received special training at one of the educational bases of the FSB. After this training, he was transferred to Afghanistan, where he had never been before, and where, following the recommendation of his Lublyanka chiefs of the KGB, he had once penetrated the Bin Laden section and soon became his assistant in Al-Qaeda. Now, I can pretty much say that this is again nothing new to me, because we can pretty much relate to that based on my experience, what the communists were really capable of. Communist espionage was very much involved in narco trafficking, also subversion operations against the West, and again, if we accept the collapse of communism as genuine, we will never understand why this is happening. The very important part of this situation is now why this is happening, why Russia is involved in training these people. If this was done for the defense of Russia, then why train them in terrorist operations? Why basically not try to destroy these groups, namely when these groups most certainly contain people that were already trained in Soviet Union during the openly communist era? Why not just reveal to the rest of the world who these people are, and get the necessary help from related security services, intelligence networks of the West, get the help of the United States and Britain and also Western European countries to put an end to these groups. When we look at the situation in the terrorism today, how Al-Qaeda is still able to survive, how the networks are still operational, namely in situations which now recently are basically happening in Iraq, and we get to see that, for example, Syria, one of the Russian friends of Russia, long-term friends of the Soviet Union and the Communist Bloc, are helping the insurgency, and also Iran. We can just basically see that the Russians are not to be trusted. That what comes from these facts alone. I was very much amazed at the reaction of the U.S. public when this was happening, and the acceptance of the quickly spread information regarding the London bombing and any other terrorist operation, that these were done by Al-Qaeda, by the Muslim fanatics. Of course, we have to look back and take a look who's supplying the weapons, who's supplying the explosives to these people, who supplies the training, logistics, all of that, and we have to seriously question why this is happening. Now, are these people in the Russian leadership, are these people committed to freedom? Is there a freedom in Russia? Can we see that the Russian people are truly free, that there is no authoritative government in Russia? How much time the Russians will need and the Eastern European countries will need to create truly free free countries? Isn't 15 years of these post-communist basically zigzagging and trial after trial of new ways, isn't it enough? I mean, shouldn't we ask these questions seriously, especially at the same time when these countries are secretly supplying the main enemies of America? We have to realize that people are basically not watching what really happens in the world, and our so-called analysts are totally disregarding what really happened in Soviet Union and in Eastern Europe at the end of 1980s during the Perestroika deal. I was able to go back and recollect what was written about the Soviet Union. There's an amazing book that was written by a former major of the KGB defector, Anatoly Golitsyn. The book is called New Lies for Old. Let me just quote real quickly from page 13. This is regarding the precedent for today Perestroika, which was set up by Lenin. It was called New Economic Policy of Russia. Now, false opposition movements were set up and controlled secretly by the OGPU, that was the predecessor of the KGB. They were designed to attract to their ranks genuine opponents of the regime inside and outside the country. These innocent persons could then be used by the regime in various ways. They could act as channels for disinformation. They could be blackmailed and recruited as agents. They could be arrested and given public trials. A characteristic, but not unique, example of this technique is provided by the so-called trust operation. In 1921, as the NEP was being launched, that new economic policy, the OGPU, was the Russian intelligence, created inside Soviet Russia a false anti-Soviet organization, the Monarchist Alliance of Central Russia. It had once been a genuine organization founded by Tsarist generals in Moscow and Leningrad, but liquidated by the Soviet Security Service in 1919, between 1919 and 1920. Former members of this organization, among them Tsarist generals and members of the old aristocracy who had come over to the Soviet side, nominally led the movement. Their new loyalty to the Soviet regime was not in doubt, for they had betrayed their former friends in the anti-communist underground. They were the Tsarist generals Brusilov and Zajkovsky, the Tsarist military attaché in Yugoslavia, General Potapov, and the Tsarist transport official Yakushev. The most active agent in the trust was a former intelligence officer of the general staff in Tsarist Russia, whose many names included Oberpfalz. Agents of the trust traveled abroad and established confidential contact with genuine anti-communist emigre leaders in order, ostensibly, to coordinate activity against the Soviet regime. Among the important emigre were Boris Savinkov and Generals Wrangel and Kutepov. Now, when I look at this, of course, the new economic policy involved splitting Soviet Russia in two independent, supposedly independent countries. that was the setting up the Eastern Republic of Russia. That was pretending to be democratic. They attract some Western investors also that had no knowledge of what the communists are capable of. The total misunderstanding of how communists are reacting. Of course, that's the time when these people were trying to become stronger, when the communists were trying to become stronger. And so that was the time when Lenin decided to split the country. Of course, after Russia became stronger and the Bolsheviks subdued all the opposition movement and destroyed these people, many were killed. After that, the Eastern Republic slowly merged with Russia into Soviet Union. New economic policy or plan was officially ended by Stalin in 1929 with what was called socialist offensive on all fronts. The concessions to foreign industries were cancelled, private enterprise in the Soviet Union was prohibited, private property was confiscated, agriculture was collectivized, repression of political opposition was intensified. So, now today, now Galitzin states very quickly here the lesson of the new economic policy. The disinformation of the new economic policy period had been successful. Seen through Western eyes, the threat of communism under the NEP seemed to have become diffused. Fear of Bolshevism waned. The position of anti-communists was undermined. Expectations of rapprochement were aroused. The Western public, reluctant to make sacrifices, urged their governments toward further accommodation with the Soviet regime. In reality, of course, the challenge of communism had been reinforced. Western expectations were later to be rudely shattered. But the communist strategists had learned the lesson that Western leaders could be deceived and induced to make mistakes in their assessment of and policy toward the Soviet Union. This information had in fact created favorable conditions for the success of Soviet internal policy, activist diplomacy, and Comintern activity. Thus says Mr. Galitzin. Now, when we look at what really happened in 1989 in Eastern Europe, we can see that just exactly the same thing happened, except it was much more sophisticated. The collapse of communism was implemented by already in advance prepared people, the so-called dissidents, people that were in fact communist agents. Now that was done and these people were trained, prepared in advance, some of them since as far as 1975 and even before that. Now we have to look at the situation in Russia today and in Eastern Europe and realize that none of the people that were in these circles ever brought any kind of freedom to these countries. Of course, the people responsible for countless murders, the communist criminals, were never punished for their crimes. There was never any justice done. As a matter of fact, the newly so-called democratic regime of Eastern Europe protected these people from prosecution, from justice, and therefore none of them were ever brought to justice, never tried, never sentenced.
Anza.
Hello. Hello,
Chris. How are you doing? I had a broadcast technical problem with my equipment. I'm talking to you on the phone line. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes. I should be on the air.
Yeah, we're on the air. I just talked to Nicholas, and I was doing the show myself on my equipment over here, not knowing what was going on. So I have a technical problem here, and so now we're together, but I'm just on a telephone.
Okay.
So we're about to hit commercial pause, and I don't have any music to play. So maybe... We'll have some music. Maybe we'll just go to commercial pause. How are you doing with the listeners? Are you doing well?
Yeah, I was trying to explain basically what we were talking about. I was reading from the interview with Litvinenko. I was trying to explain to listeners that the mistakes that were done during the Lenin period, the new economic policy that was set up to attract the West and Western investments, was in fact set up by the communists to lure the opposition movement back into the Soviet Union to destroy these people. And of course, there were very significant changes in Russia that were pretended for the Western consumption, and I'm explaining that the same thing happened during the Perestroika period, the end of the 1980s. It was just about exactly the same thing happened. So the major precedent in the new economic policy of Lenin was set up for the Perestroika deal, and the West is blind to it today.
Absolutely. Well stated. You continue. I'm just going to listen in.
Well, it's sort of funny to do this on my own. I've never done this before, but except to talk. I was reading from the Litvinenko interview explaining that Russians must not be trusted because these people are in fact very much involved in operations that at the end will cause a lot of problems for the Western world. They will cause the end of Christianity. It will cause basically destruction of our freedom. I'm looking at what I already read on the air several times, but I'm going to read it again. It's how the Russians were involved in the subversion of our economic means of our economy, Western economy, by infiltrating and setting up front companies in the West. There was a committee set up by Boris Yeltsin. It was a secret audit done in 1991. And
keep in mind, we're going to go to commercial pause now.
Yeah,
so
no.
So we don't have any music. We're just
going to
jump into it. So once again, we're Hansa Molina listeners. Anticommunistanalyst.com is the website. It's there for you. It's there for all of us to read and research. As is AmericanExpose.com. So we'll be jumping off into commercial pause, as you know, any second now.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
This program on FirstAmendmentRadio.com is much more than entertainment. It is more like an information-packed audio magazine delivered direct to you, like any magazine. If you don't want to keep getting it, simply unsubscribe by not listening. But you are listening, so now go to FirstAmendmentRadio.com on the Internet and follow the instructions there to make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program. Not only should you subscribe for yourself, but you should give extra to help us spread the message of FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Don't do Internet? You can also write us. First Amendment Radio, 139 East Tulare Avenue, that's T-U-L-A-R-E Avenue, in Tulare, California, 93274. 139 East Tulare Avenue, that's T-U-L-A-R-E Avenue, in Tulare, California, T-U-L-A-R-E, California, 93274. Thank you.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, it has been traded,
It has been borrowed. It has been purchased. It has been stolen. There's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and WBCQ Shortwave at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188.
And welcome back to the broadcast. This is Chris Gerner with American Exposé. Technical difficulties have a situation going on here. I'm on the phone with Hansa Molina, and certainly when we connect all these dots going on in the country and the world, it all connects back to situations being maneuvered to us and at us that we have no comprehension of. I see Russian Communist Party expects 15 to 20 million people to vote in their referendum. Russia to supply 15 million tons of oil to China. Russian Air Force to China and India in military exercises. Large-scale military maneuvers in Abkhazia. United States and the CIS, a compulsion to pursue democracy. CIS are the republics of the Soviet Union, so to speak. China and Russia to team up for war. Chinese-Russian defense ministers meet. China's widening income gap threatening social stability. Hansa, we see these different directions going on, and I covered to myself at the beginning of the broadcast, China creates crack unit to crush poverty protests in China. So all these things are being maneuvered and engineered. It's very, very ironic that this is going on and the major press isn't touching any of it.
Right. I was explaining to listeners that basically I was asking questions, legitimate questions that we should ask Russia today, and of course in the case of China is obvious, but we should ask Russia and these Eastern European countries, do we see really the genuine freedom that we were expecting? Do we really see that these people give up on the military rearmament? Do we see these changes as Russia really that kind of strategic ally of America? I was trying to explain that we don't really hear that any names or any description of operations that the Soviet KGB and GRU were involved, namely in terms of supplying terrorists and training terrorists. We don't get any names from these people. As a matter of fact, in the case of Czechoslovakia and Czech Republic today, the Czech leaders are claiming that the Czechoslovak communists never train any terrorists. So this is just what we get for signing disarmament treaties with these people and trusting them. So it's pretty obvious today what they're doing. It's just I'm basically sitting here and trying to figure out how America could be so blind to it, you know, when you sign a disarmament treaty with criminals, murderers, oppressors, tyrants.
Keep in mind, Hans, that most American people don't know that there are disarmament treaties being signed.
We signed.
It's never publicized.
Yeah, it was publicized that we signed disarmament treaties with Gorbachev, and of course, what was in those treaties? Yes, that's a good question. There was agreement already signed in 1972, the SALT agreement.
Yeah, and keep in mind we've been told that the Soviet Union's collapsed.
Right. And that's what the communists want us to believe.
And Russia's dead, you know, the communism is dead, put it that way.
The problem with that I have is that even if the Russian people would be dying of hunger, the communists would never give up their power. You know, again, major precedent during the Stalinist era, Stalin purposely denied food and food supplies to Ukrainians, and he basically forced famine on Ukraine, and 7 million people died of hunger in Ukraine.
Right.
Now, the same thing would happen today if the communists really gave up on their power over the people, gave up the control of the society. You know, as far as I can tell, that would never happen peacefully. There would be blood flowing on the streets, a lot of fighting, a lot of people would be killed, and the communists would still retain the power, over the society. Of course, if there was any economic problems, the people would rather die. The major example of it is, Chris, North Korea.
Yes.
That's exactly what the communists would do. They would rather see their people starve to death than to give up the power of the society.
Uh-huh.
And that's just what exactly it is. And so we were fooled. We were fooled, and we better wake up because they are coming.
Well, and there's a big concern with communist Cuba, situation in Venezuela, where actually it looks like the leader of Venezuela is allied with communist Cuba, and yet they're selling gas for a very cheap price, offering it to Americans. So I see a bit of a game plan being engineered here.
Yeah, that's situation in Venezuela is it's amazing. I mean, it's just, again, if the collapse of communism was true, how come there's communism spreading all over the world? It's not only a question of Venezuela, it's also a question of today of Brazil. We have personal friend of Fidel Castro as a president of Brazil, the Lula da Silva president. The situation in Africa, the civil war in Colombia, where the communist guerrilla people supplied by proxy from Cuba, Cuban agents in Venezuela, Cuban agents in Colombia. Of course, there's ties to narco trafficking also. These channels were built by Soviet KGB and sister services throughout the since the 1960s. They subverted these South American countries exactly for the reason to get them, because they were, before that, they were mostly Catholic countries, Christian, and good allies of America. Today, I mean, you can't count on them at all. As a matter of fact, they're becoming enemies of America. So does it show that we are being surrounded? Of course it does. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Being maneuvered into, more than likely, unconditional surrender.
Well, yeah, that's, I mean, that would be the perfect way, but the Russians, they know that nothing of a kind will happen. The American people will not stand for that. So that's why they're building all these nuclear bombs and building the nuclear bunkers, because they had big help from the Clinton administration and from Vice President Al Gore, who set up the money laundering scheme with KGB criminal Yevgeny Primakov back then, when the money were floating to Soviet Union, to Russia, and reappearing on phony accounts in Bank of New York, and the Russian mafia accounts. So, to facilitate their operations, of course, Russian mafia should be renamed as the Russian state-run mafia, because these people are, again, quote, former, unquote, KGB officers. What can I say? I mean, I reported on my website several times about this. I'm just the one man, one voice. So, No, I can't do much. If people don't listen, then we'll have to learn the hard way. And I mean, that's how sad it is, in fact. You know, and we are stuck in this predicament because we just simply trusted communists, and now we seeing the fruits of it. So I just seen, if I may quote real quick, this is actually quote from the Bible, Chris, and it's very significant. It's from the first of St. Paul the Apostle to the Ephesians. Let me quote really quick, because this should have been followed. Let no one lead you astray with empty words, for because of these things the wrath of God comes upon the children of disobedience. Do not then become partakers with them, for you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk then as children of light, for the fruit of the light is in all goodness and justice and truth, testing what is well-pleasing to God, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. Now, isn't that exactly what is happening today?
Mm-hmm.
That's you know, it's true. That's
yep.
what it is. And, you know, so we are pretty much becoming sitting ducks, not understanding. Our leadership doesn't understand. Let's face it, the whole society. We don't have a lot of people who understand that Russia is not really our ally, you know, and that we can't accept nothing good from China.
Well,
you see these people buying cheap products made in China in Walmart and helping these people to buy more, and it's all a matter of getting easy profit and not thinking that this will cost us in the long run. So what can I say? I mean, I'm just the bystander. I'm watching this in disbelief, but, you know, all I can say is just tell the truth, and, you know,
well,
that's all I know.
Hansa, the funny thing is that Chavez has been in Cuba to attend the graduation of Cuban-trained doctors from 28 countries, was sent off at the airport, and Cuban President Fidel Castro sends him off. So here we are, cheap gas in Venezuela, but Hugo Chavez is allied with communist Cuba.
Well, not only that, but he attended meetings in Russia with Putin, and he also attended meetings, of course, in Cuba. That's obvious. There was some kind of connection with Iran, actually with Saddam Hussein. I'm looking at the interview. This is a brilliant interview, again published by Jeffrey Nyquist, with former Venezuelan Air Force Major Juan Diaz Castillo, who was presidential pilot for Hugo Chavez. Let me just quote real quick. The question was, President Chavez went to see Saddam Hussein in Iraq about 2 years ago. Is that right? Correct. His answer is, do you know anything about that trip? Yes, President Chavez made some comments to his entourage at the time. He praised Saddam Hussein's leadership and also as an example of someone who fights the United States. Another question. So President Chavez hates the United States. President Chavez publicly stated that the September 11 attacks on the United States were the fault of the United States. He said it was the good thing that the United States was attacked, that these attacks were long overdue. And also, in private, President Chavez was very impressed with the terrorist operation of September 11. Now, this is exactly what we're getting. This guy is openly communist. So now we're seeing what the fruits are of communism, and of course there was a referendum in Venezuela that was basically crippled, and there was some foul play, but never really uncovered that they were trying to these military officers were trying to basically take the President Chavez and his administration down by a coup, but that was unsuccessful. So now they had to flee the country, basically, and as Venezuela is very important oil supplier to the United States, all the oil companies are now state-run. So that's just how it is, how quickly the freedom and the free market is taken down when communists are allowed in power. And the same thing happened in Eastern Europe, same thing happened all over the world where communism succeeded, and the same thing could happen in America if we don't protect her.
Now, with the Berlin Wall and the fall of the Berlin Wall, did that not destabilize the entire country of Germany?
You said destabilized?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, yeah. The strategy was not to open the door for the Western democracy to go east, but the opposite, to spread the errors of communism to the West.
And that was successful.
Of course, yeah. I mean, they replaced. There was a scheme to replace pro-American Christian leader Helmut Kohl, the German Chancellor. That strategy succeeded. They replaced him with East German cadre, Angela Merkel. That was basically totally pacified the Christian Democrats, the party in Germany. And of course, the leadership today of Germany is totally pro-Russian. They are social democrats. They are formerly the Schröder, Chancellor Schröder, and his ministers. They are totally opposed to any kind of policy United States tries to implement in regards to terrorism, or you know that the Germans were not involved in the war in Iraq, and they were actually opposed. They supplied also technology to Saddam Hussein, which again is highly questionable why that was done. There was some involvement of the Germans in organizations that were front for the KGB previously. So therefore, you know, we can no longer count on our NATO allies in Western Europe, because they are basically, first, they are not prepared to fight a war. They are not ready to help us, and they don't have the will to help us. They are opposed to America and friendly with communists. So, you know, that's basically, that was the strategy of Moscow from the get-go, to dissolve NATO, basically to make NATO not efficient in the sense of defending the Western societies. And that was, in my opinion, that strategy was highly successful.
Well, then see, when gasoline is cheaper than mineral water in Venezuela, this is angering the American people. When they can go to Venezuela and get 12 cents a gallon for gas, isn't that kind of a brainwashing technique that they're pulling off?
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to take into consideration that the prices down there. Of course, when the oil is oil industry is state run, they can pretty much dictate the prices. And also, don't forget that the cause of the high oil price today is communist China. They are buying a lot of oil, you know, the blindness of America, basically by agreeing to do business with communists, is enabling China to get ready for the war. And they are stockpiling all these supplies that they will need.
Well,
and
once again, here's this article, Russia to supply 15 million tons of oil to China.
Yeah.
15 million tons is a lot of oil.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, what they need it for. I mean, there are people driving bicycles in China, so, you know, I mean, they don't need it for the population. they need it for the military.
Yeah.
There's a lot of tunnels and underground bases in China also, as much as in Russia. So, we are pretty much seeing what happens. Why this is not addressed by the major media? Well, don't ask me. Ask them. They think they want to call war. I don't think so, but they still think so. So the euphoria is obvious, and now they are not willing to accept that the Cold War never ended. Basically, we are still deeply in it. As a matter of fact, we are worse off today than we were 15 years ago.
Oh boy, yeah. Absolutely. And we're in another war.
Yeah, well, of course, the war already started for the Russians and for the Chinese. We're the only ones who don't know it yet.
And yet we're shooting it out in the Middle East.
Yeah, well, that was the policy. The situation in the Middle East is, in my opinion, it was created for us, namely to set up a sort of another Vietnam and stretch our military thin, so we wouldn't have a lot of protection here in homeland. And
nobody will want to join the military to fight for their country pretty soon.
Right. Well, that's also... the society today is not what the society was, let's say, during the World War II. I'm talking about American society.
And our industrial base is gone.
Yeah, that's true too. That's what it is. It's amazing how far this was allowed to go. It's amazing.
Yeah, there's probably intelligence people from China and Russia listening to us talking with big smiles on their face.
Oh yeah, they laughing in the Kremlin, drinking vodka and laughing. There was a report. Well, actually, it's in the book of Anatoly Galitzin, The Perestroika Deception. He says that basically the Russian military officers are routinely making jokes about Perestroika being replaced by Perestrelka, which means in Russian shootout.
Oh, really?
So that's and they are generally talking about giving the United States a bloodbath. So when you see that they have missiles like the ICBM intercontinental ballistic missile, the Tupol M, which is the SS-27. Which is virtually district, we can destroy it. We don't have anything to shoot it down right now, and we are so much behind in the research that it will take another 5 to 10 years to cut up. Russians got all the time they want. I mean, it can all start tomorrow. It can start within a month. It can start within 6 months, but it will come. That's the bottom line.
That should be everyone's concern, and it's not.
No, of course, yeah, we are living in a hedonistic society today. Everybody likes entertainment. People watch baseball games and TV. The garbage that's put out by Hollywood, and we are pretty much becoming decadent so much that. In comparison, historical comparison, we can compare ourselves to the ancient Roman Empire.
Right.
Just about the time when the empire was basically the empire collapsed,
mm-hmm.
because nobody was willing to defend it. People became so involved in entertainment and easy life and enjoying the life and that they were not willing to fight. This is the denial of God and becoming a hedonistic godless society that will eventually be our we will have to pay for it. I mean, this is as simple as it is. It's basically about us. That's what it is.
Mhm. Yeah, it's very ominous to me, as I've been concerned all my life about this, and watched our industrial complex turn different directions using foreign companies and contractors to build equipment. Well, when it actually comes into place, we won't have any ability to build anything.
Oh, the ability will still be here. There's a lot of people that know, you know, how to build things,
the factories won't be there. The tooling won't be there.
Yeah,
well, it's all gone.
Yeah, that's true. The thing is, we will have to improvise, and it's going to be very difficult. And you know, but these people are ready as they ever be. I mean, I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
In the equivalent, there were people that warned about Hitler in Western Europe.
Yeah.
And these people like Neville Chamberlain and the Legier in France,
mm-hmm.
they were perfectly willing to sign agreement with Hitler. And Neville Chamberlain claimed after the signature of the Munich Agreement in 1938 that he brought 100 years of freedom to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, in 1939, Hitler invaded Czechoslovakia, basically. And it all started in the agreement between Russia, between Stalin and Hitler, the Ribbentrop-Molotov agreement, how they split Poland in half.
Mm-hmm.
That was another part of it. You know, how much you can trust these people, and these are sister ideologies: Nazi ideology and communist ideology. They are both based on the same thing, that the government and the leaders know better than the people, and that too much freedom is not really good for people.
Well, it's very ironic. We weren't here to depress everyone. We did have a little bit of a technical problem here, but you heard Hansa, engineer of the show himself, and we apologize for the structure of the program today. I'll try and get this thing fixed tonight, and Hansa, we will continue. I don't know whether I can talk to you after the show or not, because I've got to work with this phone line here. But I appreciate you being with me, Hansa.
Sure. Thank you.
We'll talk tomorrow night, hopefully, and I'll try and get this problem taken care of. Good night. God bless you all. Good night, Hansa.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Well, John, I want to hand down to you some family heirlooms.
Really? Did you hear that, dear? Grandpa has some gifts for us.
That's nice, dear.
So, what do you have for me?
Well, I have this Bible. It's been in the family since our relatives came over on the Mayflower in the 1600s.
Wow, that's got to be worth a lot. Hon, what do you think we can get for this?